in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Hi, welcome to The Leap, coming to you live from the Line Hotel in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Sarah Gordon. I own a small business, Gordy's Pickle Jar, and one of my favorite things about being a small business owner is talking with and learning from other entrepreneurs. And every Wednesday, I get to have these conversations on air by bringing together small business owners from a wide range of disciplines to share stories, wisdom, tips, and advice. On today's show, I'm super excited to have Christophe Grinot, social enterprise entrepreneur. He's the founder of Uptop Acres and a Forbes 30 Under 30 honoree. Woo-woo! Thanks so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Really happy to have you here. So you co-founded Uptop Acres in 2014.
Yes.
And you guys basically are greening the city by turning underutilized rooftops into small-scale farms.
Yes. Productive growing spaces, fruits, vegetables, flowers. We keep bees. Just trying to bring a little bit of agriculture into the city.
I love it. But before we talk about Uptop Acres, I wanted to chat a little bit about the road that led you here. Were you always into farming? What's your kind of background?
No. So I actually grew up in D.C. City kid, D.C. public schools, no connection to agriculture or really just any kind of, you know, plant soil science at all. But I did an internship in high school with the Anacostia Watershed Society, and I basically just got thrown out into the wetlands that they were replanting on the Anacostia, and I worked under the horticulturalist and sort of fell in love with it.
What year was that in?
That was 2006. Yeah. And then was looking to apply to colleges, and my parents are a nurse by training, architect, real big into sort of trade skills. And, you know, they said if you're going to go to college, you need to go and get some kind of trade skill. So it was plant and soil science because I like plants.
Awesome. Yeah. So they didn't want you to do poetry.
I think they would have liked me to do that, but also to.
Yeah. So then you went, you're in Vermont, and then you got out of school, and you co-founded this with a couple other D.C. public school graduates.
Yeah, so with two high school classmates of mine, Jeff and Kathleen, we were back in D.C. doing different things. I was running a farm out in Maryland, and Kathleen was working in urban planning, and then Jeff was doing sort of social entrepreneurship stuff, so it's sort of all those three backgrounds sort of came together, and we just got inspired by some groups doing stuff in Brooklyn and said, hey, let's start exploring this, see if we can bring it to DC.
That's great. And it seems like a little bit of, you know, given your background, a kind of like a natural leap, right?
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, where you've come since DC public school days.
Yeah. I was the kid in class in Vermont who always was like looking at it with that lens of an urban environment. So yeah, I think it was sort of the natural progression.
So how'd you guys decide to go the rooftop route? I have some guesses, just that, you know, land in DC is expensive and difficult to acquire.
Yep.
But how were you guys we're going to focus on rooftops?
So you nailed it. It's land is super expensive in DC. Very hard to come by, hard to get a long-term lease. If you can find that land, it's often contaminated the soil, so it's not safe to grow stuff. So we were thinking, we got inspired by a group in Brooklyn called Brooklyn Grange, who are sort of the OGs of the rooftop farming community in the US, and basically just tried to take their concept and adapt it to DC. So we just started blind, you know, cold calling, sort of property owners, developers, you know, talking to them about it. We ended up working for a construction company that installed Green Roof to sort of get that background of how to actually build these systems, how to do it properly, do it safely. And yeah, just a lot of meetings, a lot of like polite no's. And eventually, as it seems like a lot of the time in the DC Food Network, our paths crossed Jose Andres.
Yeah, which was really great. First kind of deal to land, right?
I mean,
you guys worked with him on what, your first project?
Yeah, they helped us sort of launch a pilot over top of Oyamel, sort of growing fresh herbs for those restaurants around there. And yeah, that was proof of concept, and we were able to start taking that to people and get taken seriously after that.
That's great. So did Jose, like himself, kind of mentor you guys on...
So I actually got to hang out with him a lot because I was managing his personal home garden. That's like how we got connected.
Yeah,
so I just spending time with him, talking through it, you know, he has an interesting way of just like getting to the point immediately on things and you know how are you going to do this, what's the business model. So yeah, it was really nice to sort of early on get, I mean, a harsh critic. He has no filter at any moment, so yeah.
So I mean, when you guys started at that rooftop at Oyamel, you were kind of growing higher end items, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, mostly just petite herbs, edible flowers, stuff that like restaurants wanted fresh, and that was mostly just because of our limitations with the amount of space we had and sort of in other infrastructure. But we've since expanded.
Okay, yeah. I was wondering if it was also just because of like those are kind of hard to get things mm-hmm. for the chefs to find. So
yeah.
It's nice to utilize, you know, if your restaurant has a rooftop, it's a nice way to utilize that space
absolutely.
Be able to get things that you would otherwise be able to obtain. So today you guys have what, five rooftop farms?
Seven now, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we added a few this year, so.
That's awesome. So you're on track for your big 2020 goals then, huh?
I try not to set hard goals like that. Just do projects that make sense and, you know.
So how'd you guys kind of go from one to seven? What was it like scaling that?
So we opened the first pilot in 2015, and then we were able to open another one in 2015 too, a little bigger. And then after that, we opened another one in 2016, and then another larger one in 2017. And then this year sort of started to go exponential. So it was another three this year.
But they're not really, at this point, they're not pilots anymore. They're
full scale. Yeah. So 2016 is when we launched the sort of full scale growing spaces. And I mean, the way that happened was we sort of had the proof of concept. We're able to set our sights higher and we're able to prove out the concept economically a little bit, so we're able to get some better financing, shoot a little higher.
Are you guys reaching out to kind of like the residential developers, or are they reaching out to you? Like, how does it work? Because it's such a win-win situation for them, for you guys. Is a little bit of a mixed bag where you guys reach out to them, they're also reaching out to you?
Yeah, it's starting to become a mixed bag. So previously, it's just been us really reaching out to people. But on some of our larger roofs, they're on office buildings or residential buildings that are owned by larger property management companies. And once we built that relationship, we sort of get in with the pipeline of their projects,
right. We
get pushed around to other property managers, so we get marketed internally, and that helps, and we've gotten a few projects through that. So it's starting, there's a balance. I'm going after this to look at a potential rooftop that, you know, I reached out to, so there's still a mix, still
right.
Got it.
And I mean, hustling. Are you guys, is there certain criteria for the rooftop?
It's, you know, got, first off, is it's got to be able to support the additional load of soil. That's number one. So it's got to be built properly.
Do you
properly.
Find rooftops that like...
Yeah, most of them can't.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, if they're not designed with it in mind. Yeah, it doesn't work. So a lot of newer buildings, and then actually a lot of like older buildings, like built in sort of the mid 20th century are good. They're built really sturdy, but in between there and, you know, 2000s, it's not so good. So yeah, it's structural engineers are involved. So that's the most important. And then second is access. So, you know, we can't be climbing 10 flights of stairs, hauling, you know,
right,
hundreds of pounds of produce every week. So you want to have an elevator that goes up there so we can bring carts, get tools, get equipment, and then really access to water. That's big, but most buildings are equipped with that. and then sunshine.
So in terms of, out of curiosity, mm-hmm. so like for OEML's rooftop,
yeah.
So the reason why that you had to grow these kind of more specialty crops is because of there wasn't enough. You can only do like three what?
Yeah, we had about 4 inches of soil up there. Yeah, okay. So that we were restricted by the structural capacity.
Because of weight.
Of weight, yeah.
Okay. So what's like an ideal in terms of like soil-wise? Like
So we typically have about a foot of soil like in our growing beds up on the roof. And that's ideal. That lets us grow everything from watermelons, tomatoes. Yeah. You know, we grow carrots. That sort of gives you the full range.
And then, so you guys are structured basically to sell, you know, to the office, to whatever kind of building that you mm-hmm. guys, like have the partnership with, and then yep. you do what, a CSA and
yep. Wholesale to restaurants too. Yeah. So this is the something that I like the most is none of the produce travels further than a quarter of a mile, from any of the roofs. And
so
that's
awesome.
Something I'm super proud of. And yeah, it's cool. You know, we deliver it via cart,
right.
you know, to down the elevator in the lobby.
Are you guys able to like form those partnerships, those wholesale partnerships where like, you know, say, I don't know, for instance, Gordy's needs like X amount of like okra grown per year. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, are people coming to you kind of like with these, you know, specific numbers and specs and stuff, and are you guys able to fulfill those, or are you guys working your way there?
I would say yes and yes. We can do that, and we're working to get better at it.
Yeah,
that's how we ideally like to work with restaurants or, you know, other producers. That gives us the most security,
right?
You know, the relationship's better because it's sort of like contract growing,
right?
Yeah, and that's what we look for in partners. So we've got a few really awesome partners that we work with here in D.C. Blue Jacket and Marcel the chef from Blue Jacket, has been awesome.
Awesome. And you're right there.
Down in Navier. Okay. Yeah, we've got a few roofs down there. And then also Ice Cream Jubilee has been awesome working with Victoria. We grow the basil for their basil goat cheese ice cream in the summertime.
That's
cool.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... yeah, you basically grow as much as you can for whichever wholesale, mm-hmm. you know, and then if needed, they'll have to supplement.
Yeah, and we try to plan as much as we can. So we sit down in the winter and we're, you know, say, oh, you know, what does well? Oh, hot peppers. Okay, just grow a lot of hot peppers for us and we'll buy them all. And it's that, those are the kind of relationships we want. If they supplement, they have to supplement.
But, right. Yeah. What percentage kind of is your business wholesale versus the markets versus like CSA?
So CSA is about 70% this year, and then wholesale is 30%. We're actually not doing any farmers markets.
Oh, you're not?
Yeah,
no.
So we did farmers markets previously, but we sort of cut it out. It's just, there's a lot of unpredictability.
It's a lot of work,
and it's a lot of unpredictability. I mean, this year has been terrible for farmers markets. It's just been raining.
Yeah, right.
We made a decision to cut that out. It's tough. I really like farmers markets, but it just makes more sense to focus. Yeah.
Yeah. So you guys are, like, how are you guys kind of promoting the CSA and getting people to sign up for the CSA?
So we do promotion in the building itself. So we'll do flyers in the lobby, flyers in the elevators. We'll do tabling. We'll do that on surrounding buildings, you know, blast it out through bids. Just basically that social, the one problem we don't have is demand, which is a good problem.
Yeah,
to have.
That's a great problem.
Just
yeah.
People are really excited about what we're doing.
Yeah,
and
it's so
and it's
great.
Convenient. If you work in an office building and you can come down once a week and get a bag of produce and just, it's, you know, sort of turnkey.
Yeah, I mean, and if you live by that office building or live yep. by one of your farms, like, I mean, I would go there weekly to yeah. get my CSA. You know, I have a lot of curiosity about kind of what the government is doing mm-hmm. to kind of make DC a greener city. It seems like, you know, you guys would be a great partner for them mm-hmm. In terms of doing these things. So, mm-hmm. Where is that kind of at with DC?
DC is good. DC, their heart and their head is in the right place, and we're working towards it. So, the sustainable 2.0 plan, the goal for agriculture is to put 25 additional acres of space into food production in, I think, like 10 years. So it's all, and they have policies that are moving towards that. So we've played a role in getting the Urban Agriculture and Food Security Act passed in 2014. It does a lot of things, but specifically relating to urban agriculture, it gives a property tax abatement to private landowners who lease their space to producers, whether it's on the roof, on the ground, indoors. And we've been working to get that implemented.
So that's a huge incentive for...
Yeah, it will be.
Yeah.
We've been working for 3+ years now to get the city to implement it. I think we're getting close. knock on wood,
yeah.
We're going to get there this year. That'll be awesome. And then they're also making district-owned land available for private farmers to grow on it. So basically, if DDOT owns an empty lot somewhere, they have someone on staff who's going through putting that up for bid, and you can submit a business plan to create an agricultural business with that land, sort of free of charge.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So they're doing awesome stuff.
Yeah.
We're ahead of the curve.
Mm-hmm. What city would you say kind of exemplifies, where you would like to see DC go?
You can pick and choose. I mean, DC is really at the forefront, but there's a lot of great stuff going on in Baltimore. There's a lot of good stuff in New York, Seattle, San Francisco. I mean, sort of the usual suspects.
Yeah.
But I mean, internationally too, we were talking about Paris.
Yeah.
Denver also is doing good stuff. There's cool stuff, and it's sort of like you can sort of try to pick and choose like different initiatives, and sort of taken as a whole, it's like the perfect.
Yeah, it seems like, just from being in the space and kind of keeping up on the beat, it seems like everyone's kind of got their finger on the pulse,
mm-hmm.
And I just think it's a matter of time until we see some like really great things happening here in DC and elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys had a incredible. Least successful Kickstarter campaign.
Yes.
Congrats. That's
Thank
awesome.
You.
Did it take a lot of work to get those 303 backers?
Yes, it did. We've been super fortunate throughout this whole process to have a really awesome support network that we would have never gotten here without. So,
yeah. Well, you guys are doing really awesome stuff, so that kind of goes hand in hand.
From family and friends to the Halcyon incubator that we were part of, we were able to we started working 3 months before we launched a Kickstarter on it. So just getting the video together, getting all of the literature, reaching out to potential backers, just building relationships. Yeah, it was a long process. But again, we had people that we've known that have gone through Kickstarters before that sort of mentored us.
Really?
Yeah.
I was wondering, I'm curious, because I feel like we've met people who've done Kickstarters too, and it's kind of, it's either like they, it's, you know, either they love it or it's like,
yeah,
it was good, but it's like a ton of work on like the fulfillment end. In terms of if like you're trying to kickstart for a product or.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, I mean, and that was some of the advice. I mean, it's a ton of work beforehand, just all the marketing, all the promotion, all the planning. And then, the fulfillment side, we got some really good advice from people that had done Kickstarters and warned us about that. So we tried to make our rewards less product like mm-hmm. based, where we have to mail it, and more, you get tickets to events.
Smart.
Stuff where we're not spending, tens, hundreds of hours packaging stuff and sending it out.
Yeah. I feel like the real upside of Kickstarter outside of the funding is that, if your campaign, if it's well done, goes viral, it's just like free mm-hmm. eyes on your company, which is kind of priceless.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think we went quite viral, but I think we did get a lot of eyes.
Yeah, you guys did. You did really well. I mean, would you recommend that route to other entrepreneurs that are seeking funding?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you just have to put in the work beforehand. We worked for 3 months before, and we had half of what we raised committed before we launched.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we were reaching out to people just through various networks, basically just saying, hey, we're going to do this. Like, would you be interested in coming? Here's the list of rewards. What would you want? And then basically just getting that committed beforehand. So if you're willing to put the work in, it's super helpful. And I mean, we wouldn't have been able to expand to new roofs without doing the Kickstarter this year. It was super, super important.
Instrumental. Yeah. Do you think that it's easier for people because you guys are a social enterprise, like you're doing amazing things that are, it's like easy to love versus you know, I guess signing up for a Kickstarter that's a product that's, you know, something that, you know, doesn't really.
I think to an extent, but I also have seen like those crazy Kickstarters that are like, you know, like the electric skateboard that have like $20 million invested into it. So I think it goes both ways.
Yeah. I'm not totally on the beat of Kickstarter, but I always love to see when people are, you know, have run good campaigns and, you know, then surpass their initial goal. So great. So now that you're kind of like 4 years into your business, what advice or tips would you give to someone trying to start a business in DC or kind of elsewhere?
I think definitely you got to dig into the nuts and bolts of the business. You know, more so than you may think you have. You got to dig into it more. We sort of did a business model, business plan, and you know, things have changed. It wasn't totally accurate, which I guess is gonna happen. But you know,
kudos to you for actually like doing the modeling and the business plan.
Try to be as diligent as possible. I guess just be flexible. Like, we've pivoted a bunch and we're constantly shifting the size of projects we're doing, you know, the kind of contracts we're trying to sign, and just like where the distribution goes, how that works. Just be flexible and sort of go with it, while keeping your core values intact. And then don't forget the people that have helped you. I think that's super important and something that I have to work on sort of on a daily basis, is like practice gratitude for the people who have gone out of their way to help you because they believe in what you're doing. And you know, that's like a social contract that you need to repay.
I agree. What do you think have been like kind of your biggest challenges as you kind of like scale and grow and you know, go from 1 to 7 farms or 7 to 15?
Two things. Logistics is like, that's what my life revolves around. Just like, how are you growing food and distributing it on 7 different roofs across the city? Like, getting tools, getting materials, getting the food up and down, like that's just really tough. And each roof is its own separate entity. It's totally different. You're dealing with different property management teams, dealing with different engineering teams. You know, it's like different loading docks. Like, everything is different, and you have to like make sure each one is working by itself, and then also within the larger,
collectively, yeah,
which I'm sure is, it's a dance,
right?
It's just the same as it is with production,
right?
Pickles. And then, so that's a big challenge. And then funding has been a challenge. I mean, we sort of, it's hard. It's hard to get your initial funding, especially for us, where it's like sort of an unproven business, really. It's like there's nothing really to base it off of. Whereas like if you're opening a restaurant, it's like, okay, this is the set business plan for that. You know, rooftop farm, I don't know. So that the traditional avenues haven't really been available to us. So we've sort of had to work harder to piece it all together.
Yeah. I mean, is it easier? I mean, is there a lot of grant opportunities for it since like, you know, or like different avenues? Because, you know, maybe you can't measure the impact financially, but I feel like there's other ways to measure the impact. That's kind of maybe in some instances like a lot more profound than a dollar.
Mm-hmm. We've gotten a few grants, but it is tough because we are a for-profit company. We're an LLC, we're excluded for a lot of stuff. So you have to sort of like look for a fiscal sponsor to do that. And yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know. We sort of like fall in a gray area between a lot of different categories of grants. And the USDA has some stuff, but it's not really tailored towards urban agriculture. And that's something that we were hoping would get addressed in what was supposed to be the new farm bill this year, which is now expired and has not been renewed. So all of those programs for young farmers, conservation.
What is the status of that?
The farm bill?
Yeah.
So it expired last week. So all of these programs are now not funded. There is a version in the House. There's a version in the Senate. They're totally different. And there's a lot of other things occupying the time of the House and the Senate, and it seems like the Farm Bill has sort of fallen to the wayside. So I don't know. I honestly don't know. I need to check in. Yeah.
Yeah, I have no. I'm like, oh, I need to reminding myself that
yes.
I'm on,
yes.
you know, the Leap podcast. Because I have a lot to say about the last couple of weeks. Well, it's awesome to have you on today. Thanks so much for joining me. And we're really excited for you to keep on making DC green. And the Leap will be back live next week at noon.
Sweet. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.